nom de la Fondation, nous vous souhaitons. Oh, man. It's been a while. Une équipe très chaleureuse. Before introducing the moderator, which is my main job, there's some business I wanted to take care of. This is one in a series of monthly talks that we run, and they would not be possible without the support of the BMO Financial Group and its Vice President of Government and Public Relations, Paul Deegan, who's with us tonight. Thank you for coming, Paul. As well, we're grateful to Shaw Media, the lead sponsor for tonight's event. And I want to also thank my old friend Peter Herndorf from the National Arts Center for donating this wonderful space for us tonight, perhaps one of our finest venues in the series. As always, we're indebted to CNW for telling the world what we're all about, and of course the CPAC for once again amplifying this talk for a national cable audience. One of the projects that gives us a lot of pride is JSource and its sister site, Projet J. Those are sites that the go-to sites for anything you want to know about the journalism business, news and analysis. We launched those sites in partnership with the J Schools of Canada and other organizations, and we continue as a major funder, and we're delighted that JSource is going to be live blogging tonight's event. And for those of you who tweet, want questions or commentary, our hashtag is CJFJTalk. Now on to the topic. I have to say that I worked on the Hill many moons ago in what must look now like a gentler, kindler time. Joe Clark, at the request of somebody at a press conference, one of his regular press conferences, posted his daily agenda. Cabinet briefing papers on policies were routinely made available after decisions were made. It was possible to get ministers on the telephone. It was possible to have quiet lunches with deputy ministers and ADMs. I'm told reliably by anonymous sources who cannot be named because they are members of the Parliamentary Press Gallery that times have changed. I'm told information wells have gone dry. I'm told that access to power and people in power does not exist. And I'm told that a new 24/7 channel on the Hill actually beams exclusive video from the PMO to the nation. So it raises the question that's before us tonight, does the press gallery matter? Our moderator, Tom Clark, has actually seen it all. He's interviewed every prime minister since Lester Pearson. He's covered every federal election campaign since 1974. And his youthful looks do belie those dates. He still continues to be a marvel. He became Global's chief political correspondent in 2011. Now, of note, if you look at the Global resume, he is also called the bureau chief in Beijing, there's no network mentioned, and that he spent 5 years as the bureau chief in Washington, no network mentioned. A little bit of spin on the release. Sorry, Tom. I was told not to do that. In addition to his permanent postings, Tom has spent much of his career traveling the world. He's reported from 33 countries, including 6 active war zones, the latest of which was from Afghanistan. Journalism is in Tom's blood. His great-grandfather, Joseph T. Clark, was editor of Saturday Night and editor-in-chief of the Toronto Star. His grandfather, Greg, was a reporter and columnist with the Star, and his name stands proudly on one of the awards that we hand out to emerging journalists at our annual awards gala, the best schmooze in Toronto, by the way, on June 4th. We welcome your attendance. And his father helped spearhead Canada Newswire. So without any more ado, I give you moderator Tom Clark. Wow.
Thank you, Bob. And now that you all know that I got here by nepotism, I just wanted to point out that, you know, it's disturbing when you hear your own history read back to you. But while you were reading that back, I was looking at my mentor, who was in the business so much longer than I was. Don Newman is right here in front. Ladies and gentlemen. Anyway, We've got a great program. We're going to start with a discussion here, and I'm going to introduce everybody in a moment, and then we are going to go to questions on the floor. In keeping with the times, I have a list for those of you who want to ask a question. Anyway, you know, we are gathered here at a very difficult and critical time in our history. When we have to ask the question, do we matter, we know that nothing short of our actual existence is at stake. So, what is it? Have we lost the public trust? Are people just not buying what we're selling? Are we irrelevant to the national debate? Whatever happened... Oh, I'm sorry, these are the notes for the PQ Council this afternoon. Sorry. Confused that somebody sent me these notes. But actually, perhaps our peril is not unlike that of our friends in the PQ this evening. So the central question is this: does the press gallery matter anymore? And I think that there's probably a dozen different ways of asking that question. Do we add afterwards, does the press gallery matter anymore? And if so, what were those golden days that we lost, and why did we lose them? Do we matter? Is it just right now? Is it just Stephen Harper and his band of renowns who have marauded and plundered their way through a free press in this country? Jason? Or is it just a temporary diversion and history will soon correct itself? Or is it more likely that this is a permanent situation no matter who's in power? Do we matter to our readers and to our viewers, or just to the process on the Hill? And we have to separate those two. So those aren't the only questions we're going to address, but it's a way to start, and I want to introduce you now to our terrific panel. Jennifer Ditchburn of Canadian Press is with us, a man who has been described as a free-range senator, Jim Munson. David Akin, who's always on a battleground somewhere. And Jason Kenney, who Jason, we're delighted that you're here tonight.
Everyone is.
Well, it's the only reason people showed up tonight was for you. Yeah. Let me start. And this is probably something that you don't know, but there is one person up here on the stage who really does know what they're talking about, as opposed to the rest of us, and that's Jennifer Ditchburn, because in May, she is going to receive her master's degree.
Maybe.
Chris Waddell, are you here? You're going to help me? Okay. She is, right? You told me that. In the history of, among other things, the Press Gallery in Canada. So let me start with you, and let me start with that question about do we matter anymore, and give us some context to this. I mean, because we can't know where we're going unless we know where we've been. Mm-hmm. So where were we before? How great was it, as Bob said, or how bad was it? And is it really that much different today?
Well, the history of the Press Gallery, I think, is something that I feel really proud of as a Canadian. Canadians probably don't know much about it. And the fact of the matter was that the Reporters' Gallery was there the day that Parliament opened in November of 1867. And so all the battles that Westminster had to recognize reporters and have a Hansard actually happened in Canada before 1867 in the province of Canada and the different legislatures. And reporters, alongside politicians, battled for reporters to be able to be there and listen to the speeches because they felt that was important, an important aspect of representative democracy. So, as I said, I'm very proud of that. Recently, I went to the rare book section of the Library of Parliament, and I went to look at the original debates from November 1867, because I'm a bit of a nerd. And if you go online, you can read the original debates, but they're not actually the debates that were recorded back then. They're reconstituted. But if you go down to the rare book section, they pasted them, they pasted newspapers together from 1867. The Ottawa Times was, the newspaper of record back then. And I read through the first days of Parliament. And on the second day, there's a reference to the gallery. It says, "The Honorable Mr. Fisher was heard very indistinctly from the Reporters' Gallery." I think that's something, as I said, that we should keep in mind. From the beginning, and I think this has a lot, Confederation had a lot to do with this. Some of the fathers of Confederation were reporters, Darcy McGee, George Brown, there were about three others. So, and of course, Sir John A. Macdonald also had a hand in developing a newspaper himself. So it wasn't really a question whether reporters should be on the Hill. They just were. In fact, the architecture of the Hill, right from the get-go, had a reporter's gallery. It was refurbished in the late 1800s, again, when the Parliament buildings burned down in 1920. They even built more more stuff for the gallery, the hot room, which is a great place if you ever get to see it, a very historic spot on the Hill. You know, just as a reminder of where we come from, I think it's, you know, a special history. And compared to the United Kingdom, where, you know, still reporters, they're sort of treated still as the strangers in the gallery, you know, this is pretty cool.
And, you know, it's fascinating, too, and correct me if I'm wrong on this, but before there was Hansard, there was the Globe and Mail. And the Globe and Mail's report of the debates was taken as the official record of the, sort of like it is today.
And the Ottawa Times. Yeah, right. And the Ottawa Times and a few other newspapers. And there were sort of, you know, less than a dozen reporters that were recording Parliament. And they were very highly partisan, I should note. They sat in the gallery depending on which party they were aligned to. But they were still there, and if you read some of the older accounts, you know, they still talked about anonymous sources and getting around the roadblocks to information that Sir John A. put in the path of some of the liberal newspapers.
Well, you've certainly opened up the door to a few other things. You know, we're almost back down to 12 reporters in the gallery now. and there's a little bit more partisanship in the gallery than perhaps there used to be. Senator, I want to go to you because, like Joni Mitchell, you've seen love from both sides now. When you go to the dark side, as you did, what is the change in perception of the necessity of the gallery? Because I remember you when you were a reporter and you were a true believer in what you were doing, what all of us were doing. And did that change substantially when you went over?
Well, before I answer that question, I want to say that the Press Gallery and the Senate of Canada have one thing in common. We're all doomed. Now we're counting 1, 2, 3, 4. Somebody has their trigger finger on their BlackBerry and has already tweeted that.
Yeah.
Senator Munson has said that we're all doomed, the Senate and the Press Gallery.
I think the tweet said just the Senate is doomed.
We'll talk about that tonight. But that's why I want to get into the discussion of the reactive process which is happening in the Press Gallery through tweets and blogs and the rest of it. Because you can't get a chance to catch your breath to do anything in this town without somebody tweeting about it. And I was making a joke. So as they continue to tweet, that was a joke about where we're at. I think the Senate will survive, and of course the Press Gallery will survive. Look, in 2008, I was on the election campaign and with Stéphane Dion. And there I was on the runway, and I was talking to a journalist. And the journalist at that time said, well, he had a BlackBerry. And I was talking to the journalist as we're taking off. He said to me, look, Senator, I can't talk to you because I have to Twitter. At that time, the word tweet wasn't used. He said he had to Twitter. And I said, my goodness, we're going down the runway. This guy has to go to the bathroom. Or he has a stomach ailment. What's wrong with him? That's only 6 years ago. So I think when I take a look at what's happening today in the Press Gallery is that everybody has their trigger finger, you know, on their accounts to report today's events. An example of that is today is the issue of allegedly Minister Fast doing this. And you would think the world was coming to an end in a 45-minute period because everybody is following the noise. Mm-hmm. It seems that too many reporters are following the noise and not doing enough substantive work. To answer your question, to get working into the Prime Minister's office, first of all, I must say it was a privilege and an honor to work with a Prime Minister. If anybody has the opportunity to extend their livelihood and extend their life in the political world and has an opportunity to work for a Prime Minister, don't turn it down. And I did think that way, that, my goodness, this is the, I'm going to the dark side. So much so that when the Prime Minister Chrétien called me at that time to say, Jimmy, would I, he offered me a job, and we talked for a bit. I put the phone down. My wife said, who was that? I said, it was the Prime Minister. And what did he say? I said, he offered me a job. What did you say? I said, I think about it. And she said, Jim, we live in the Glebe. We have a mortgage, two boys in university. You're 55 years old. The network let you go. And you just told the Prime Minister of Canada that you'd think about it. Call him back. It was the best decision I've made in my life. I mean, I've worked overseas for 10 years. I covered a lot of interesting news stories from Tiananmen to Belfast to Beirut to Indiragan. We were there together on some of those things.
We were.
But there has never been a place that where I've worked where I have discovered so much of working on the inside. And it's not yes against them. It's the reactive process, though, sometimes, as you would understand, Mr. McDonald, the reactive process is insane inside, because somebody just said this. Well, we should react to that. No, I have to have a bit of discipline. So when I walked into the Prime Minister's office, I tried to look at it as in the prism of, we are a newsroom with a filter. We have to operate like a newsroom. We have to think in the way that the media thinks. And with some suggestions to the Minister Kenny that we actually had a process of that we call back, we answer back. We didn't tweet very much because it wasn't there then. We didn't even email much. But we actually picked up this instrument called a telephone, and we called back. Every reporter who called the Prime Minister's office during my 2 years with Mr. Chrétien, we called back on the same day. We didn't want to get suckered at 5 to 8 by some journalist who would say, at 5 to 6, and say, I just wrote my story. Here's my story. What's your comment? You don't do that. You have to wait that one out. But we felt at that time, that I really felt at that time, working inside the Prime Minister's office, that you had to be on the page, no matter, it wasn't, oh, the dreaded National Post or A Friendly or the rest of it. My philosophy was that reporters have to be inside the room to connect with the thinking of government. So if we could not get answers from somebody inside the PMO, and not using just, you know, the spin part of it all, but somebody that we worked with in foreign affairs or energy or whatever to call back, we made sure they call back. That's the kind of... But I didn't look at it as a dark side at the end. It was a great deal of enlightenment.
Because you mentioned Jason's name, I think it's only fair to bring him into this. And I just want to point out something, that Jason isn't just a minister, but he is an astute student of Canadian politics and political communication going back to the days of John Diefenbaker. This is no neophyte on the stage, just practicing the art in the last couple of years. Jason, you heard what Jen said. You heard what Senator Munson said. From your perspective, and in terms of what you do and what your government does, let me ask, does the press gallery matter to you?
Well, first, a disclaimer. I want my presence to demonstrate that it's not true conservative ministers avoid the media, or that conservative MPs are afraid of being accessible. I just hope, though, that you report me tonight anything I say by my stage name, which is Senior Government Source. All right? So, let's get that out of the way. Tom, I remember as a young kid, as a young liberal, sorry, Lee, I was, and wasn't always perfect, looking up to guys like those in the front row here. I remember meeting Hugh Windsor when I was a young liberal at my first convention when I was 16, and to meet an impressive national figure who held the pen on defining coverage of national politics. So the first time I met Don Newman, I was as humble as I am now to be in his presence. But these are, I mean, for me, the press gallery has always mattered as an institution to hold us elected guys accountable as an essential organ of democratic discourse. And having said that, as a practitioner, I've often been frustrated by what Roger Ailes calls the orchestra pit approach to politics. Let me explain. The very first time I had direct encounter with the press gallery was when I was a young 25-year-old whippersnapper, president of the Canadian Taxpayers Federation. I came down here from Western Canada. On a Wednesday, I held a press conference at the Charles Lynch Room. This would have been circa 1995. And I was there to release an impressive 100-page study that our research department had worked on, slaved on for over a year, on the salutary impact of balanced budget legislation and constitutional limits on government spending throughout the developed world. This was a policy geek's dream.
Wow.
And I put out a media advisory, and I'm sure one went to you, Jim. I showed up at the parliamentary, at the Charles Lynch Room, ready to take these questions. I'd studied and memorized the document, questions and answers. One journalist showed up. The next day, I had a little more fun. I was protesting the failure of the then government to reform, perhaps ironically, the parliamentary pension plan. And there was 142 guys who were refusing to opt out. So I went down to Canadian Tire here in South Ottawa and bought 142 pink plastic pig lawn ornaments. And we put those pigs out on Parliament Hill, and I had a press conference. This time Munson showed up. And I and the plastic pigs were on the front page above the fold of every major newspaper in the country. We were on CTV. We got national broadcast news. And that's the Roger Ailes orchestra pit theory of politics. He says, if two guys walk out on a stage and one explains that he has the solution to the Middle East conflict, and the other guy falls into the orchestra pit, guess who ends up on the evening news? So as a practitioner, I must admit, for all of the honest respect I have for the gallery, even as it's changed and its role has changed, its audiences have shrunk, notwithstanding that, I as a practitioner, have always regretted the fact that there is this tendency towards what Rod Love calls political journalist as fight promoter. And I don't know what the answer to this question is, because I know everyone in the gallery now and people in political journalism more generally are struggling with this challenge. How do you capture and retain audiences in this fracturing media environment? I'd like to believe that there is an audience, a paying audience, for substantive coverage that's actually willing to find interesting policy stories and go deep, that it's not just about politics as fight, political journalism as fight promotion, that it's about more than whether, than exactly what was the nature of Ed Fast's gesture at 2:58 in the House of Commons on a given Wednesday. So I don't have the answer to that, Tom, but I think the institution of the gallery and its collegiality, I mean, it's different. Last thing I want to say is let's not create this false idea of some Arcadia in the past, right? I mean, the truth is the history of the gallery that Jennifer is studying, for most of that history, the gallery was a handful of old white guys sitting around drinking scotch with the people they were covering. And it was clubby, and the positive side of it was collegial, but it was a bit of an echo chamber as well. So I don't think we should pretend that that there was some perfect past that we need to recreate or emulate.
Well, speaking on behalf of old white guys who drink scotch, I want to thank you for bringing that up.
And I want to apologize, Tom, for the fact that all of the TV seats are taken in the Senate right now. It's by CTV, I know.
I don't think I ever worked for that network, according to my biography.
So the issue now is let's get ready to rumble.
I want to go to something that all the panelists have brought up, and this goes to David Akin, because one of the things that Jen talked about at the beginning, the idea that reporters would sit, depending on their political leanings, on one side of the gallery or the other. Jason, you're talking about the clubbiness of the past, the Bruce Hutchisons, for example, who would go on extended trips with Lester Pearson, among others. David, we seem to be returning to, maybe we never got away from it, but returning in a very overt way through your network to very partisan political coverage. And I'm wondering if that skews the equation a little bit, that you can't pretend as collectively as a press gallery to be a virgin when, in fact, you know that in the back room something's going on with Sun News.
Which part of that do I take up? Let me just start with the partisan angle. I'll start with the partisan angle. So I worked for the network that cannot be named when I came here, and well, three of us, I think, were on that network at the same time. I can't remember its name. And then I was at CanWest, and I'm where I'm at. And before I joined the network I'm at, I was walking by Heise one day, and Jack Layton and Ann McGrath are sitting there, and I like to chat them and see what they're doing. So I sat down. And Jack Layton offered me a job as his director of communications. And I sat down and I said, why does he think I'm a New Democrat? I'm assuming you need to be a New Democrat if you're going to be on Jack's staff. And I was very flattered, and I took a couple of days, and I didn't answer the question, am I a New Democrat? I just like the job I'm doing, because on any given day I can say anything I want. So I put that out there to say that there's people hired at our network, and I think I'm one of them, who is going to be an equal opportunity, whatever. And then there's definitely people hired at a network who are coming at a particular political bent, a small C conservative bent, sometimes a big C conservative bent. And I say sometimes. And I think the issue there is we took a look as a business model that's sustainable at what we see in the United States, where the most watched cable news networks are networks that have a clearly defined sort of political slant, be it Fox, be it MSNBC. The one that's lagging in the ratings sometimes terribly is CNN, which is the one that tries to shoot down the middle. It's different here in Canada, and we'll see how our little project sort of goes. But I think one of the other things, too, I'll speak to Jason's point to say I agree that the idea that there was this Arcadia in the past is something that ought to be challenged. I'd like to hear your views on this, on Janice.
I didn't say it was a golden age.
No. But just the view on the gender makeup, for example. Jim and I were just talking, Senator Munson and I were just talking about the 79 film he was in.
Jim's okay.
History on the Run. A lot of you have seen that. Some of you are in that. And it's the Trudeau campaign that he'd lose to Joe Clark. And there are people on the bus. And I don't remember a female journalist having a significant role in that movie, and certainly not on the bus. And female journalists play very significant roles, obviously. Right now in the gallery, there's Sun News Network and there's Rabble.ca. There's a tremendous diversity of news organizations accredited to the gallery, and that surely must be a good thing. I'm certain back in the day, very narrow news agenda, very narrow number of news organizations. And here's something else. You complain about this in the movie. Jim's working for Canadian Press, I think, at the time, doing radio. Is that, were you CP or was it?
Standard.
There you go. Pardon me. Okay. But there's a point where if you're on, many of you have been on election campaigns as either combatant or as a witness, and there's stressful times and you're moving from one place, you have a lot to do. And you say at one point that you're frustrated with your desk because you've got a story that you want to, you think this is a story, but the desk, invariably in Toronto, has seen a CBC report. And, well, we've got to follow CBC because we need reaction to what they is. Or when I worked at the network that cannot be named, if there was something on the front page, I was a business and tech reporter at the time, if there was something on the front page, and as weirdly, I was also a writer for the Globe and Mail at the same time, if there was something on the front page of the Globe, then the TV networks would want to have that in their newscasts at night. So there was this huge, ridiculous group thing. The most absurd example of that is I remember pitching my assignment editors on the TV side a feature story, a technology-based feature story, and they hummed and hawed, and nobody thought it was very interesting. And then I went upstairs to my masters at the Globe desk, and I said, I've got this story idea. And they said, great, and I got money to travel. I went off, and I did it, and I wrote it, and it made the front page, at which point they called me up and said, there's this great story on the front page of the Globe we ought to do. I said, yeah. So just the knucklehead thing there. So to come back to saying is, there's a great diversity in now that has not existed. People say we're losing membership. some newsrooms, and we have some pretty clear examples of folks here in the room now who are out of a newsroom pretty freshly. But Rabble.ca wasn't around
the
here.
The numbers are stable.
The actually. Numbers are stable. 330 or so. That was about when I joined the gallery in 05. We have iPolitics. That's brand new. Sun News Network. That's brand new. There's lots of new stuff. We're going to very much miss, I think, the Western Producer. I very much hope they put someone back here on the Hill. So you can go to the Press Gallery website. Take a look at the great variety of news organizations that are credited to this Hill. But I think that speaks to the validity of a press gallery.
I want to let Jim get in on this, and we'll do this mm-hmm. a bit more rapid fire so we can get a lot more ideas on the table. Just let me, I just want to pose one thing, Jim, and then please pick it up from here. But if the central question is, do we matter, it really comes down to this, that however much we defend ourselves and say we're diverse and much better than we used to be, the fact of the matter is that this government, and I suspect any government that follows it, I don't believe that this is unique to the Conservative government at all, has found that you can govern quite well without having to deal with us. That you, in the modern world of looking for votes, you slice and dice anyway. You go to the ethnic media. The Minister of Unusual Foods would know all about that. And so the communications policy or program of any government, such as it is, has found a way to get around the rock in the stream that we are. And I pose that not because I believe in it, but because I think we better talk about it. But, Jim, pick it up.
Well, I think that the press gallery can only matter if we can break down the walls in the Prime Minister's office. And I'm not saying with a sledgehammer. It's renewal, it's spring, it's time for another crack at this. Jason, Minister, you know better than anybody else how to schmooze the media. You are good at it. You really are. Because you mean it. Back in the days of the Stockwell Day campaigns, you were there, you were meeting us, you were open, you were there, we're out for dinner, we're having, you know, that sort of thing. But you were able to do that. And I think that, you know, in the interest of transparency, that there has to be a way where the media has access not just to the foyer of the House of Commons, but to the briefing rooms inside ministers' offices, inside the Prime Minister's office. I mean, it's hard to cover substantive things, if you don't have an idea what the government is thinking and the calculations and the ramifications of a government proposal. You know, I was almost going to say we, but they need to understand the thinking behind it. And to understand that, there has to be. For example, you just had this digital whatever something happened.
Strategy
happened. You had that happen. I mean, were there briefings? Were there time for reporters to sit back into a room to have discussions, not only with the minister, but with the deputy minister, whoever in the bureaucracy is running that program? And I think there's an opportunity here. We're going to be facing an election in 18 months or less, according to some conspiratorial theories. And it's a unique opportunity to reset the clock, I believe, in the Prime Minister's office. I believe that you get it, that you understand it, because you can connect with each and every person in this room. But well, I think there are some.
Let him answer.
Well, I think that there are some. Well, I'm just doing my old reporter thing, keep asking questions.
Yeah, yeah.
But anyway.
I'm doing my editor thing of saying, you're done.
And that's why I hate at that desk.
I plead guilty to having the quaint idea that a successful communication strategy involves communicating. but I don't think that's a unique. I don't think that's a unique view in our government, and nor do I think the complaints that Jim's put on the table are unique to this government. Pierre Trudeau had a famously dismissive attitude towards the media, and if what he said is true, didn't follow it because of his disdain. Brian Mulroney, in the early days of his government, was criticized for going into communications lockdown. And Jim, until you showed up, you came to solve a problem in the Kretschmann PM, and so on and so on. So the notion, one thing I'd like to suggest is, yes, you know, a fair share of criticism can be directed towards our government on a number of fronts. Excuse me.
That's the
no, I know I can't take the call now. Sorry. And a fair bit of criticism is direct. You know, we can take some fair criticism. Absolutely. Over 8 years, we could have done some things, been more responsive at times. I actually, if you don't mind my saying, the approach I think of our government generally with respect to the press gallery has not been in a completely straight line. I think there's been different iterations based on personnel, based on the situation. I think, quite frankly, back in 2006, as is often the case with a very new government, really wanting to establish some degree of message discipline, there was a lot of centralization that I have, as a minister in the last few years, not found myself. I've been allowed to, like most of the colleagues I know in cabinet, ring up reporters and communicate our message and be accessible. So, you know, my point is, yes, some criticism is well-founded, but I don't think we should exaggerate it or suggest that this government has been. I just heard a comment, for example, in the introduction about the, there was some snide coverage about the Prime Minister's office producing this 24/7 kind of internet video product. I mean, for goodness sakes, everyone is doing that. The internet has been driven increasingly by video content. When I go and sit down at a editorial board now, guess what they do? We have the 1 hour policy wonk conversation, and then they say, please come over here to our makeshift studio and condense that into 5 30-second soundbite segments, because we find that we're getting 10 times more hit on the video content than on the print content. The White House is doing this. 10 Downing Street is doing it. L'Elysee is doing it. Stephen Harper's office does it, and all of a sudden, it's mocked by some people in the gallery. So I would say, you know, of course the government, of course the Prime Minister's office is going to pursue web-based media platforms just as the gallery is. And I don't think these sorts of things are an effort to go around and subvert the gallery. I think it's just an effort to communicate with where audience
is.
This is a really important point. And you're absolutely right. You've got every right to use whatever you think. But I'm going to give you an example. When we go and travel with the Prime Minister on overseas trips, and I'm often the guy in our organization, I'm going to use the Middle East trip, the historic trip to the Middle East. Each one of us pays, each organization on that plane, $10,000 for that trip for a reporter. And then, because we're broadcasters, we have probably another $20,000 to $30,000 to pay for feeds and for the pool. We're paying a lot of money. We get over there, and we go up to a refugee camp on the Syrian-Jordan border. This is a big deal. The Prime Minister is going to be there, and we are able to film and shoot and report on the activities of the Prime Minister. Remember, the first job we have, I think all of us would agree, describe, report, tell people what's going on. So we do that, and then we're all coming back, and we're getting the bus, and we see the 24/7 video that's happened from this. Carl Vallée, the Prime Minister's press secretary, tweets it to us, and we look to it. And there is video of MPs, Canadian MPs who were with us. They'd gone right to the border and accepted refugees as they were taking their first steps into safety. There was a Canadian MP shaking their hands and putting them on a truck that Canadian taxpayers had paid for and donated to this. And not a single journalist was notified this was happening, let alone got a chance to go film it, record, and tell these wonderful stories. That's one outrageous example
of
the PMOs.
I'm sure most didn't want to put you in harm's way, David.
Oh, yeah. That's outrageous. The PM gave a speech in Israel, and we didn't even know about it. I mean,
Hang on a second.
Sorry, I'm getting upset over this.
Add to what Jason's saying, it's not just Obama and others. Kim Jong-un has his own 24/7.
Yes. But he has a sweet haircut, I just wanted to support what you were saying.
But hang on a second, David. I wanted Jennifer to get in here.
24/7 video. I mean, Obama's been very highly criticized for locking out photojournalists so that his own photographer can capture what he's doing on
him. Which every president has done, I think.
Well, it doesn't make it right, though. And I think the 24/7 video recently has really crossed a line into propaganda in the sense that, for example, on the day that Joe Oliver was sworn in as cabinet minister, no journalist was able to scrum him that day. And instead, we got this nicely packaged video on 24/7. So I think that, as I said, I think you're crossing a line into where you're saying, you know, I would rather have this nice propaganda piece for the public to see rather than letting reporters at the minister and find some accountability. You could see it as a press release, an electronic press release, but have both. Have access to journalists. But I just wanted to respond to something that you said earlier about access to the Prime Minister's office and it being the same as going back to Trudeau. I think on a certain level it's true. Trudeau, Chrétien, Martin, everyone's done different things to manage the news. But I think what we're seeing right now is a real crisis of government information in the sense that reporters no longer can talk to bureaucrats. And when I came to the Hill in 1997, I could call up somebody who was drafting legislation and get them to explain it to me. And when you're talking about substantive coverage, that's what you need to do substantive coverage. And Hugh, I know you would talk to many bureaucrats over the years about different pieces of legislation. So that stopped in 2006. And if you talk to any gallery member who was here before 2006, they'll tell you the lines into the bureaucracy just shut down. On top of that, and I think this is much more serious, is that when you ask a department for information about any piece of legislation, a program, what you get are talking points. They're politicized talking points. You don't get a department saying, here's all the information we have in a very anodyne way about a particular program. You get what sounds to me like promotional or persuasive material about a program. And I think that's really something that we should all be very concerned about. The government is not supposed to be promoting one political party or the other. I think Justin Trudeau will do it too. And I think that the NDP will do it too because they think it works. But I mean, this is a whole, you know, a whole other point. I think that there's been a serious unintended consequence for the government of the policy that they've undertaken with shutting down access to ministers. Not you, Jason, because you're very accessible, but access to ministers and access to information across the board. And that's that reporters have had to look for other ways to get their information. That's why you see so many scandal-driven stories, investigative stories. When I came on the Hill, we had so much access to ministers and policy briefings and so on that we were busy as hell. And we had a lot of material to work with. Now you don't have anything. Someone sends you the same email 5 times. You're not going to print that. So what do? You look for new sources. That includes academics, foreign governments. I've gone on foreign trips with David where we've had to go to foreign governments to get information. You use data mining. David's done some very interesting things to collect information and make stories. And access to information, it's gone up, why don't I have the number here, but 200% since 2004. Media requests and access to information has gone up 200%. So I think there's an unintended consequence of stringent news management, and that's that you have now a press gallery that you can't control as well as you could have before. But there's a happy medium in there somewhere, but the pendulum has gone way too far to one side.
But isn't there, we're beginning to uncover a terrible truth here, that nobody takes actions that are not in their own self-interest. So if a government, a current government, and I know the NDP and I know the Liberals are taking, you know, Cole's notes on how to do this, if they ever get into power, they're going to do exactly the same as what's going on right now, as you point out.
But the question
becomes, though, Jim, at that point, then how do you then, whether, you know, we can express outrage, and properly so, but at what point do you say, how do we make it in the nation's self-interest to have us with this access? How do you do that? Because there's been no demonstration I've seen recently about this.
Well, what's lost in this debate are the voters. In this debate tonight, we haven't talked about the public who need to be informed about what's going on. We have a very serious education program to build on, and it takes two sides to do that. You know, just look at energy and Aboriginal issues. My Senate colleague, Elaine McCoy, put out a website last week, which I thought is really a wonderful template to understand the energy issues across the country. I don't think Canadians understand the issue between the Northern Gateway and their own oil bill. It's that way, but it takes two to play this game. And I don't want to go back into the past too much, but in the press gallery that I was in, 1972 to 84, then 1997 and on. But in those early days with Mr. Trudeau, who got so angry with us because we were hitting him in the hallways with questions and so on, and after cabinet meetings, we knew where the cabinet meetings were because they're in the room beside the Prime Minister's office. However, we made an accommodation, and I think it is about accommodation. And so I believe that the press gallery executive, because when I jokingly say the word doomed, you say you have the numbers, but you don't have the arsenal to compete against this machine. And this machine will swamp you with information, I believe, unless you get together and have access, you know, to the Prime Minister today. With Mr. Trudeau, he agreed while Parliament was sitting that he would meet the media once a week for 45 minutes. And we had a conversation, but it took a long time to get there. It really did, but we did have that conversation. I do remember one of those meetings when, of course, everybody has their self-interest, and everybody had their question what mattered to them as a newspaper, radio, or television. But at one point, we got so exacerbated that we decided that on the energy issue, that I would lead, as a press gallery president, every question so that 15 of us could take on the prime minister. Well, it finally worked because at question 13, he looked at me and said, Jim, are you trying to set me up? I said, well, it took about 13 of us to get to you, but you finally answered the question. But the issue is we got accessibility. I think that we have an opportunity tonight in this room to urge this present government. It is about access. You can't understand the way the government thinks unless they talk.
Okay.
They talk to us.
But David,
I just
quickly.
I think it's really important. I like the idea. Let's think about voters, or in our case, or you know, the existential issue for the journalists here is our readers and viewers. We're the press gallery, and we've had this motion that was out there about the right to ask questions. And so think about it. You're a reader or a viewer. Well, journalists on the Hill say the prime minister doesn't answer questions and they want to do that. Okay, I'm going to turn my TV on to see about that. And Friday afternoon, I turn it on, and there's the PM. He's got an event live in Mississauga. Every news network's carrying it. And there's that prime minister answering questions. He does that all the time. He goes out and travels around the country and answers questions from journalists who work for my organization, your organization, the answers journalists. So from the viewer standpoint, what are those whiners up in Ottawa talking about? He's answering questions. I don't know what the beef is with that. So I'm not sure on the access side, demanding and stamping our feet. We've seen it. We've seen 8 communication directors, one of which is now an MP. It's the boss. This is the way he's going to be, and I don't know why we keep beating our heads about that. What Jennifer talks about, and this is something Laura Payton very eloquently spoke about, our president of the press gallery, I'd like to recognize Laura over there, is that, you know, a major initiative is to be announced, and often we'll get the technical briefing sometimes after the bill is tabled, and we can't ask questions. You'll give up your time, but your officials will be after you, and we'd rather have your officials before. I think that's reasonable, and I think there'd probably be room to negotiate some sort of way there. Different ministers, different departments, different communications teams will respond that way. Some others just don't care. So that's one thing I'd
let's
say.
Let's put this to Jason.
Sure.
Can you imagine a moment where there would be general agreement inside the senior levels of your government where they said, yeah, let's go back to the days when we hold weekly press conferences, put Stephen Harper up there for 45 minutes once a week when the House is sitting, answer questions outside of Cabinet, open up deputy ministers to allow them to have lunch or dinner with reporters and so on. Can you imagine that ever coming back? And if so, how would that be in your self-interest?
Well, first of all, I think the Prime Minister's view is sensible, which is he'll do media availabilities when there's news to announce, and not just going to be out there doing general availabilities when there's no news to announce. And so he does those announcements all across the country. And I do...
But we say there's always news.
The press gallery is important. Yeah. And it's essential. And it's changing. But it's not the only media. And I think that I would say with the kindest, with the greatest of respect, that sometimes there is a certain kind of insularity in the gallery. And sometimes when I see news about that, about how many questions people get to ask and grievances that the gallery has, that may be of interest to a few hundred people. I don't really think it's significant substantive news. And the truth is this, the Prime Minister is out there, as David says, every week. He's accessible. He's accessible to your organizations. He's accessible to regional media. And yes, heaven forbid, and there's a lot of sneering about this, he's accessible to ethnocultural media as well. And by the way, one of the least diverse events I go to every year is the Parliamentary Press Gallery dinner. There are millions of people whose primary source of news and information is neither in English nor in French, and that population is growing. And any government would be irresponsible not to be accessible to this. So yes, we've made a point of being accessible. And you know what? I don't like this sneering attitude in the press gallery that implies that the sort of questions being asked in ethnocultural media are all softballs, and that and they're uncritically reporting what the Prime Minister says. I'll tell you, Tsing Tao, Ming Pao, Fairchild, and so these are big, robust, serious media organizations with large and growing staff who take their job very seriously. So I think the approach you've taken, which is at least in my experience, being responsive to the gallery. When I've introduced bills or major initiatives, we start with a technical briefing for 2 or 3 hours with officials. I do a press conference that lasts until the last question is done. And then I'm on a plane to Toronto to do like 40 interviews a day with regional and ethnocultural media. So am I hanging around doing an interview with everyone in the gallery? No, because I've already communicated my point, and it seems to me that's reasonable.
Jen, it strikes me listening to Jason that is this a question of institutions reacting the way we don't want them to react, or is this driven more by personality? I mean, here we've got a first-class example here. I think we all agree on the panel that Jason has always been one of the most available ministers on the Hill.
Please stop. You're going to get me in trouble here.
That's the point.
Yeah, exactly. But is it, how much of it is personality driven? I mean, if we have a day when we have a leader who thrives on this type of communication, mm-hmm. can it just come back again?
I definitely think it has to do with personality and the tone that a prime minister sets. And I don't think it started when Stephen Harper became prime minister. I think he had a certain wariness towards the media before.
Well, you were telling me at one point that back in Pearson's day, he literally shut down the gallery for about a year.
Well, there got to be quite an acrimonious period towards the end, as there had been from Pearson onwards. There was a honeymoon, and it just went downhill, starting around the early 1960s. That's when there was a sort of a spirit of adversarialism that was imbued in the gallery. But I definitely think that it will change depending on who the prime minister is. Different prime ministers have been cozier with the media than others, so that's just a fact of the matter. But I think no matter which government comes whichever government wins, they're going to follow, I think, in the pattern of governments across the country, across Europe, the United States, and it's highly influenced by political marketing. Our colleague Susan Delacorte has written quite well on this in her recent book. And you mentioned it earlier about slice and dicing the population. So it's viewing the population as customers or consumers, and which ones you need to win an election. And that, I think, necessarily means that you don't need to communicate with everybody. And I think that's where the gallery's getting squeezed. If you identify that you need certain pockets of certain ethnic groups to help you win, and I'm not saying it's just the Conservative Party either, I'm sure that the Liberals are doing this too, then you might determine that you really don't need to be accountable to anybody else but this group that's going to take your message forward. And I think that's sort of where the difficulty for the gallery has become. The other point I would just make, and I think David was raising it before, is about the diversity of the gallery. Often we get criticized for some people for, why don't you boycott the Prime Minister's news conferences? Why don't you take a bigger stand? And I think sort of one of the nice things, it's sort of like a double-edged sword, but is that the gallery, we no longer all work in the hot room. We don't no longer even live together in the National Press Building. There isn't the sort of cohesiveness as there used to be, nor the solidarity. But that's also a good thing. I think that we challenge each other. We have different perspectives. There isn't the sort of, I argue, there isn't the sort of pack journalism that there used to be, because everybody wants to be exclusive and get their own stuff. In my office, in any case, if someone's got a story, we don't want that story. We want a different story. And so that dynamic has changed in the gallery, too. But, just coming back to the whole issue of political marketing, I think there are serious concerns for democracy there. If you're only allowing one group of the population that can help push you over the edge to win, what does that mean for the rest of the population? Let's take it beyond the media. I think there are bigger questions here for, mm-hmm. for Canada.
Can I just add something here just to take the heat off the minister a little bit? Doesn't the question that was asked tonight, does a press gallery matter? There's some issues here. Members of the press gallery seem to be doing so many different things. Canadian Press.
Saw me at Mulroney's speech last night with the video camera.
this is part and parcel of the discussion. That are you being allowed, is the press gallery being allowed to do what you really want to do, which is substantive journalism, when you're tweeting, blogging, shooting, taking a picture, doing all of these things because of the environment we're living in? Are press gallery members being honest with themselves and saying, can I want to go out and do 4 or 5 days of work and just do this because I don't want to be involved in that. I mean, it's almost like each bureau should have a professional tweeting person to do all of that as opposed to everybody.
The CBC does,
doesn't it? Well, yeah. And the CBC does it very well. Katie O'Malley does that well. But does everybody have to do that every moment of the day? I mean, I think you lose sight of the bigger picture. You lose sight of the bigger picture because you're not being allowed in a constrained environment and you do not have the resources, and even though you're crying out for them, and I think there's some responsibility within the media and within the press gallery itself to say, you know, we have to step back a bit and be allowed to do those things, to have those conversations again and to report news.
In fairness, Jim, I think, you know, those decisions are really made in the corporate boardrooms rather than the bureaus. Because it is a matter of resources. David, very quickly, and
well,
then I want to
I just
go
want
to
say, how do we change things as a press gallery? And this is a we had a discussion among bureau chiefs and gallery about after this motion about, well, do we want to change things? And, you know, boycotts come up from time to time, and Jen's right, they're just not going to work. We're too diverse. But here's an idea that I put forward, and let me put it forward to you to see about considering it. Use the weapon we have, the power of the pen, right? Why don't we write about this stuff more? Why don't we report on it? We've tried. We have access to information days where, you know, the Star, the Citizen, the Globe and Mail all share common editorials about things like that. And that's good. That's a start. But here's an idea. You just listed off, what do we want from the next PM? Well, once a month, let's say, in the NPT. We want to be notified of cabinet meetings. Let's draw up a list of the dream list of things that we, the gallery, would like as we report on the activities of the government. And then we're going to take it around to Justin Trudeau and Thomas Mulcair, and we'll see if the Prime Minister wants to be among the signatories, saying, if I'm elected again in 2015, we agree that this is the basis for the relationship with the Parliamentary Press Gallery. We do that, we got a story. Mulcair won't sign it. Trudeau won't sign it. Harper, well, we probably won't sign it because we see the way he prefers to operate. That's fine. We'll write that story. Some readers will care, some will not care. And then the person gets in and we can come back to them with that document. And well, if they sign it or they don't sign it. I think that may be a place to start. Let's put people on notice now to say, how will you conduct your government of the future?
That may be fine for you people in the media party.
I'm in the media party. Believe me, I'm happy to be in it. Yes.
Sorry, I had to get that in. I want to broaden out the discussion, probably to everybody's relief. There are two microphones on either side of the room. I just have a couple of things to say. When you get to the microphone, please identify yourself. And usually I'm going to ask that within the first 20 or 30 seconds that I hear a question mark. So we're not looking for long treaties about various things. But comments with a quick question are much appreciated. So please, if you've got anything to say or you want to contribute to this discussion, there's microphone. I'll call that microphone one, and that's microphone two.
While you're going to the microphone, the tweet that I received, first of all, that Senator Munson says both the press gallery and the media are doomed. That's the first tweet.
Who was it?
Janice Tibbetts.
What's the hashtag for the event, by the way?
Is it CJF? CJF.
There you go.
Okay.
Hi, I'm Sean McCarthy from The Globe. It's a bit of a segue from the last comment about the media party, and I do think that it's important to note the democratization of the media, and that the gallery did used to be a closed shop, and it's much harder, and there are good reasons for that, but it's much harder to maintain that now, even if we want to. And there are benefits, and there are costs, and there are benefits. On the Twitter thing, you know, Twitter is a great tool. It's not what drives my coverage. I don't think it drives many people's coverage on the Hill. I still think there's opportunity to do good journalism. But I did want to get your views on this, again, the essential question. Does the gallery matter in terms of it being a closed shop, and what are we gaining by having a democratization of the media? What do we have to sort of, as a gallery, give up, and what can we hold on to because we're on the Hill and we need the access?
And I might just add before we answer that question, if the gallery president, Laura Payton, ever wants to stand up to the microphone to join in, I'd appreciate it too. Jen, do you want to take that?
I'm not sure I understand your question. In terms of like the more diversity in the gallery, or
Well, I think that's a good thing to have, not just in the gallery, but in the people who are writing about political events in this country. In some cases, they operate in town, and in some cases, they don't. I guess the question is, to what degree does the gallery have to refashion itself, mm-hmm. as instead of being a closed shop, which we have been for all those years that you described, mm-hmm. how do we facilitate more openness and at the same time get the access that we need, because it is important when you're working on the Hill to have that access.
Well, I think that, there's that ongoing discussion within the gallery about who can be a member and so on, but you have some pretty diverse groups there. You mentioned Ravel.ca, there's Black Box Reporter, there's iPolitics, or there's new players that are coming all the time. I mean, the sad reality is that most news organizations can't afford to send anyone to Ottawa. And so you've seen, unfortunately, over the years, different newspapers actually taking back their correspondence. So we've lost the Calgary Herald, the Edmonton Journal, the Montreal Gazette. You know that very well, Sean, too. So in terms of how we can broaden our membership or open up coverage, that I think that's a difficult nut to crack, because you have to afford to be able to have someone here, and only a few of our organizations can do that anymore.
Jen and I have been on the board of directors of the gallery, and you're right, we've talked about some of these. And I'll just put this out to you as well, about the closed shop aspect that you mentioned, Sean. Recently, technology being what it is, the gallery staff, and you may not know about how the gallery works. Its function is essentially to facilitate the work of its journalists here on the Hill. So, just send out press releases. I mean, it's just that kind of stuff. And one of the things the gallery has done is, let's say there's a press conference in 130S, the Charles Rince Room, an audio version of that is available on the website. And by the way, when you had that one person there, everybody can listen to you. We might have been listening in. Probably not. In any event. So it's archived. So we have the archive recording of a press conference. We have materials distributed at press conference. It's only going to gallery members. And at one point, the gallery staff put it to the gallery executive, should we make this available at a fee, not at a fee, to the public, mm-hmm. to the journalists? Let's say if you're a Postmedia employee, Postmedia is a credit to the Hill. Could a Vancouver Sun, which Postmedia paper, access that that material? Could my chain is the Sun, could a Calgary Sun reporter listen in on a teleconference or grab the archive tape? And there was a lot of discussion about this, and involved our corporate masters, because there's issues about, why do we pay here? Why don't we pay here? The decision was made to keep it closed. All that stuff is behind a paywall that only accredited press gallery members here in Ottawa can get. Maybe that's something as a gallery for us to consider, but also for you as those interested in journalism. How can the gallery be more relevant to other journalists? Can it provide some help to people?
Jason, I suspect this brings up an interesting question, though, and that is and maybe this is what Sean was getting at in some respects, is political reporting confined to an institution called the Press Gallery, or is political reporting in the democratization of the media? Now, have we outlived our usefulness as a closed club here on Parliament Hill, that political reporting analysis and talking to guys like you is something that happens everywhere, not just in the gallery?
Well, I think that the way you frame the question is a false dichotomy. I don't think the gallery's outlived its usefulness, but its usefulness is different. And the fact that you've lost almost all of the local print media from the gallery is significant. And you've lost them because they're losing readers. I don't see this as a problem. That when the Prime Minister shows up in Vancouver, there's a long list of regional and ethnocultural media that want to talk to him, that are interested in what he has to say, or willing to ask questions. I don't see why that's a problem. That is a more diverse approach than federal politicians sitting in Ottawa talking to dues-paying members of the Parliamentary Press Gallery. We can and should do both.
Just on that, and you brought up the ethnic media. In the press gallery today, how many members are there of the ethnic media? And do you have to live and work in Ottawa to be part of the press gallery, or can you be living in Toronto, part of the newspapers that you represent, that you talked about? Are they allowed to be in part of the press gallery?
Part of it is to understand what, technically the gallery is to report on Parliament. And so, in some sense, it has to be a confined group because it has to do with security. You're approving how many people are on the hill, who's going to sit in the actual gallery. So there is that sort of that element to consider. It's not on purpose that people are kept from being remote members. It's a fact that you can't approve people that, you know, to be able to go to these very secure places.
Just a second, David. Let's go to this microphone right here, sir.
Oh, well, thank you. My name is George Freycour. I at one time was with the Canadian Press, with the CBC, and some other television organization, which nobody wants to mention.
George Freycour, by the way, is one of the legends of our business. George, great to see you.
Oh, thank you, Tom. As a matter of fact, Tom, I recommended you for your very first job at Toronto. I was also a professor of television journalism at Carleton University, and I'm glad to see that somebody as important as Jennifer is now going to get something out of us. However, I think what we really do have to consider is that the National Press Gallery should learn how to operate exactly like the government does. And one thing is no more than five questions. And because Jason Kenney has already made five answers, he should shut up from now on. We will discuss our problem. We don't need opinions from other people outside. And I am beginning to agree with Dave Aiken and some others that the National Press Gallery should be extending its influence, its thoughts, and its everything that it needs everywhere across Canada, which is now possible with modern technology. In the past, it was difficult, but it isn't right now. I mean, you can put up a website and they can read it in Nunavut in 10 minutes. So I think the National Press Gallery should begin to consider itself as a really functioning, important organization with an appeal to everybody in Canada, which I think is what the current government has been trying to do in its own way by bypassing the press and using the modern technology to get beyond what we are saying. And I do believe, of course, that the National Press Gallery is important, will continue to be important, and will in some way balance what governments are doing. And one of the things I will make as a personal suggestion is that if the Prime Minister does not want to have a meeting with the National Press Gallery once a week and discuss things, well, then get the NDP and get the Liberal Party and get the Green Party, all three of them, to do exactly that. And then go out to the public with what the National Press Gallery got from all the parties that were willing to participate. Let's let the people out there decide who is really the government paying attention to, what is the government doing, and what are the opposition parties doing. Those are my suggestions.
Thank you, George. Let's jump right away, if you could identify yourself.
Thank you. Randy Kitt. I'm the chairperson of the Media Council for Unifor. I represent over 14,000 members, media members across the country, and I will try to change my rant into the form of a question at the end. Thank you. This government has taken unprecedented control over the media and the message, giving less access to the press than ever before. Even at one point refusing, the Prime Minister refused to take a question from a journalist and punishing that journalist, later rescinding that punishment when there was backlash from the media. So I ask, when government is supposed to be accountable to the citizens of this country, how does this government reconcile putting brand and image over the principles of democracy and freedom of the press?
Well, I'll let that question sit on the table, because what we're really discussing is, does the press gallery matter?
Absolutely.
It's not that that's an unimportant point, but let's put it in the stew and Justin, go ahead.
Yeah, Justin Lang. I'm a freelancer in the gallery. So my question would be for Jason, of course. I'm kind of curious to know what's changed for you since becoming, since your days in opposition, when, you know, the Reform Party and then the Alliance Party fought quite strongly for a better framework for information, an improvement of the access to information regime, an improvement for the conduits of information, because basically you were alleging that John Chrétien and the Liberals had too much control over the systems of information. And I very much agreed with you in the Reform Party. What changed since your days in opposition to now? And, you know, how can you reconcile the fact that part of the big Reform Party manifesto was about openness and accountability credibility and improving the average Canadian's right to information. And then now, you know, it's difficult for us to get a copy of a piece of legislation before it's tabled, before we go to a press conference about it. It's impossible for us to get access to information requests back within a year.
Let's give it to Jason.
Well, what's changed is that we've added over 20 organizations in the government agencies, boards, and commissions to the Access to Information Act. What's changed is that in 2005, the government fulfilled 27,000 access to information requests, and last year we fulfilled 55,000. What's changed is that in 2005, 59% of those access requests were completed within 30 days, and last year 64% were completed within 30 days. What's changed is that we've given open data portal access to over 200,000 data sets from 38 departments and agencies. So I think objectively there's more information available more quickly than there ever has. And that may be one of the challenges is actually, with this open data portal challenge, this is not a challenge, it's an opportunity, but it's the density of information that's available and parsing through it. But just quite beyond that, I mean, if you look at the volume of information that's available online on every agent, on virtually every government program, we need to make it more easily accessible. That's what the Open Data Portal Initiative is about. But there are mountains of information that are available. And
hang on, whoa.
Getting out of the way here. Hold on.
The Parliamentary Budget Office would like to know all those things too, don't you think?
It's all there.
But I mean, so I think I'm going to demonstrate why you need reporters. But I mean, you gave us these nice statistics about access to information. But the Information Commissioner said the system's in crisis. Certain departments won't even answer your
the
requests.
The RCMP
anymore.
Refused to answer questions.
I don't know how many
violating the laws. Anybody could
complaints that went up 50% last year. I mean, I don't think anyone will dispute that the access system is in crisis right now.
You know,
is with utmost respect to you because your office has always been accessible, but there is a serious problem with information in the government.
You know, when I was Minister of Immigration, I found out that an immigration lawyer was A-tipping, that's doing an access to information request on quarterly stats of admissions and so forth. He was packaging it up and selling it as commercial information with commercial value. And I said, this doesn't make any sense. So I just said, let's put this online. So we automatically, without any media asking us, began proactively publishing our quarterly immigration stats. You didn't write a positive story about that. Openness in government breaks through. When things like this happen, it's not news. So I think there's a balance, some balance needed to this story about openness and accessibility.
I do want to address this, what our friend from Unifor said about the PM controls us, that we're somehow unable to fulfill our function, which I think is nonsense. If the PM doesn't want to talk to us, and we've had this discussion as the broadcast pool, frustrated that we don't get to take pictures, the broadcast pool decided if the PM doesn't want us at his stuff, fine, we'll go off and do news. We'll be overseas, we'll take our cameras and go do something else. That's what we'll do. That's what we're supposed to do. He may find that it's valuable to have a camera taking his picture, but if he doesn't want us, fine. We'll go do something else. We have four senators who lost their jobs recently because of the work of one of our parliamentary press gallery members. That's the guy who works for the network that can't be named. Our friend Bob Fife at CTV. Great job. The PM can't fire senators, but Bob Fife's works did. That's just one great example. Missioner awards, the highest stuff. We all the time are seeing gallery members win for terrific, wonderful journalism. Didn't need the PM to answer a question on that one. We just did it. So nobody's controlling us. We're not blocked in a box. We're happily going about our business. We're very frustrated that governments put up roadblocks, but we're doing okay, the press gallery. We're doing fine.
You need an arbitrator.
Yeah.
And the arbitrators, I suggest, are Bill Fox and Patrick Gossage to sit down and work something out between this present government and its communication strategy because it's, with all due respect, it's not working.
I see Laura Payton there. Oh, sorry. Go ahead.
Go ahead, Laura.
I don't know who's in line.
The list is working.
Yeah.
Shame.
I'm Laura Payton. I'm the president of the press gallery. And as Jennifer has a few times tonight, I want to acknowledge Minister Kenny for coming and into the belly of the beast. There's a lot of journalists here tonight, and I'm sure, you know, it's hard to be one out of five on a panel facing us.
But
I'm I am going to direct my question at you. If you were a journalist, Minister Kenny, facing all of these challenges, which we may not face as much from your office, but I think you understand them, you've seen them happening with your colleagues, how would you go about getting information if you're trying to research a story on something that's going on in the Conservative government?
I just can't answer that question because I don't understand. I don't have any trouble getting any information. So when I ask my colleagues, they give it to me. No, I think this notion that my office is somehow exceptional, I don't accept. I know many of my colleagues try to be as accessible as they can, and their staffs are accommodating, and their officials answer questions. I'll tell you the truth. My experience is very frequently. You know, Jim mentioned that sometimes he would get requests for comment at 6 p.m. and the story's already written. That happens to us quite a lot. We see stories that appear, and I say to my staff, how come we're not in the story? Because they didn't call. They didn't ask. Or maybe they called a junior official at 5:45 in the afternoon when they were already gone. So this, sometimes, believe it or not, it's a two-way street. Sometimes an honest effort isn't made, actually, to get the response. And sometimes I think the government is inaccessible and unresponsive is used perhaps occasionally, not all the time, as an excuse not to actually seek out information or commentary.
Your comment about how easy it is for you to get information in this town reminds me of George W. Bush when he left the presidency, and he said a friend of his asked him what he thought of Washington. And he said, it's great. I've been here 8 years, never seen a traffic jam once. So I think the same sort of applies in your case.
No, sir, I didn't mean to be facetious with that. I just don't know what advice to offer to you.
Maybe we can take this offline. I don't want to hog the microphone with examples.
Yeah.
I think that you might be right, though. I think that, a lot of press gallery members don't call at political offices anymore. Yeah, well, I mean, I not to be blunt, but a lot of, I mean, previously, and you could call a director of communications or a press secretary and have like a long conversation with them about policy, about what was going on. And this is not uniform across the board, but I think increasingly you find that you don't get any information, or you constantly get the same email sent to you with talking points. I think that this is not a perfect situation, but I think a lot of reporters just don't bother calling anymore. They look for other sources of information. And I don't think we're perfect. And I don't want you guys to think I think we're perfect, because we're definitely not. But there's definitely been a turn off by gallery members towards trying to get information from the usual channels.
Let's go back to microphone one. Ma'am.
Oh, hi. My name is Bea Hampson. I'm a former print, radio, and television journalist. And my question is to Minister Kenny. Prime Minister Harper, as we know, is a focused, highly disciplined, top-down management, autocratic, monochromatic kind of guy. We also know that Prime Minister Harper is determined to implement a suburban, rural vision of Canada, both in his domestic and foreign policy. Media is a conduit for government policy. Whoops. Media is a conduit for government policy. Given this, I mean, how likely is it really for the parliamentary gallery to have any chance of having any kind of substance under the current regime, or any kind of hope of being relevant, shall we say, under the current regime?
Can I just put some context to that? Just a second, David, just a second. Just to put some context around that. We were talking before. The question to Minister Kenny was, you know, what changed from your reform days when you were championing the cause of open information? And I would suggest that this is common to any political party. The change is called power. Once you have power, principles tend to fall off the rails, or at least get colored in very different ways, because you realize the discipline of power is a very different thing. It does not make it right. Some do it better than others.
Right.
But Jason, because this was put to you, let me put it to you.
Well, I actually found the last part of my question, and the question to it sort of sums up the questions, and it's to Mr. Kenny. It is, given the above, wouldn't you agree that there is very likely a minimal chance or no hope for increasing the relevance of a parliamentary gallery under the current?
I think I detect a slightly loaded question there. No, I don't agree that there is no hope. I think that...
Well, I mean...
We'll just have to agree to disagree on that.
Okay. I also get in the sense of the question that you're not a fan, you didn't vote conservative.
No,
and I ask that very seriously because the whole idea, all of us will get, why don't you boycott the press?
No, but the
press should to defeat governments. Don't you think that that's what we're about? Or a lot of people will think that way. And I think sometimes that makes us a little bit irrelevant, that all we write is stories about defeating the government.
Well, we have Mr. Sears sitting here, whose father once famously said, we have a government to defeat. It wouldn't be a discussion without Goldie Heyer getting in here. Goldie.
Thanks, Tom. I'm Goldie Heyer with Hill & Knowlton. I want to bring it back to something that just the panel touched on, but I'd like to hear more from them on the notion that there is, in fact, a gallery as opposed to a PAC. I would suggest to you that, in fact, many average Canadians perhaps perceive it more as a PAC than a gallery, particularly if you watch the news or see the headlines. I mean, if you look at the order of the news on any given night from one channel to the other, these unnamed channels apparently we're not allowed to name, it's like a mirror image of each other. It's like coincidence? I don't know. And I think that's one of the problems that the industry faces. And I say this with great sincerity as a son of a journalist. I care about this business. I care about this industry. And I think some of the navel-gazing that you do needs to be more about what do you need to do as an industry to change, to react to an audience that's looking much more for content, much more for insight, much more for storytelling that may or may not be handed to you. And I think political parties, they're all playing the same game, and I wouldn't expect them to change anytime soon.
Thanks. And just before we discuss what Goldie brought up, there's also another person who no longer works for the network that cannot be named. Rosemary Thompson.
Listen, it's wonderful that you're here, and it's funny because I did go to the, I guess, dark side, but I view it as the bright side because it's the arts at the National Arts Center. But what I wanted to put to you tonight is when you ask whether the gallery matters, I think part of it is a question of quality and the ability to do your jobs. I mean, your jobs have changed dramatically in the last 10 to 15 years. When you might have been filing one or two stories a day, you're now filing three or four, and you're tweeting and you're blogging and you're live hitting and all the rest of it. So is part of this to look a little bit at the industry about how, I mean, yes, there are wonderful journalists that still do quality journalism, and there are still desks that will allow them to have the time to breathe, think, and do the work that I know you all want to do. But is part of the disconnect with the audience the fact that you're just not able to do the jobs the way you'd like to be able to do them because of what's happening in news?
Yeah, I think a lot of us would say yes. I just want to bring one thing to the audience, and that is that if you had any other comments or questions or you want to be part of the discussion, there is a reception that starts in about 2 minutes from now. So what I'm going to do, I want to wrap things up, though, because we've had a few things on the table. Literally, if 30 seconds each can make this happen. Jen, why don't you start?
Well, you're going to take it, 30,000 feet up, and that's that it's not about the gallery. It's about the public and the audience. And as the gentleman over there referenced, it's democracy as well. And there's a theorist that I like very much named Michael Schutzen, and he says that democracies need an unlovable press. And I think I think that's true. And if you look at what you need out of a press, you need a watchdog, you need someone who's going to civically engage people. You need sometimes a press to mobilize people. And I think that we have to look at what's happening to the gallery in that context. Is what's happening to us affecting our ability to do that for Canadian democracy?
Senator Munson, 30 seconds.
Well, I think that and I'm going to agree with Minister Kenney, that in terms of controlling your own message, you have to use the medium which is at your disposal. And we have a lot of it now. And I'll just say briefly that as a senator and other senators doing their particular work and operating and getting their messages out, for example, in my work in autism, it's difficult to have the national media to cover that story, although there have been a lot of empathetic stories recently. It takes a lot of work, but you can work within your own constituency on the issues that you want to do. And so you use everything at your disposal to do, because there is a lot of noise on Parliament Hill, and there's too much coverage of that noise. So you end up, like Elaine McCoy and Energy and others doing their thing with Maria Chaput and Claudette Tardif on minority rights, they are talking directly to their constituency. They don't need the press gallery. So there has to be these are the things that you have to face in this day and age, and I think that's very important. I do want to say one little short shout out though to George Fracor, and you know this story. I think the question that has to be asked is the question that George Fracor asked a long time ago when you were in the room in Montreal. I was a younger radio reporter. You were really young, and Michel Chartrand of the CNTU, the fiery Michel Chartrand, was pounding the table and advocating, and I think you were at CFCF at that time, and you said, and this is a question that could be asked of Mr. Harper, you know, are you just saying that what we need, you're proposing anarchy? And Michel Chartrand came over the top of the table as we pulled George Fracor back, and that was one of our first lessons in journalism, of asking a very tough question. So I think tougher questions, briefings. For Pete's sake, I mean, get the Prime Minister to talk to these
David.
People.
I suppose that is a press gallery important? At the end of the day, readers and viewers, that's, I'm really interested in being able to preserve the resources we have. We're always fighting on that. So we have to constantly be saying, are readers and viewers impressed what we're doing here? Are we acting appropriately as proxies for the readers and viewers who expect us to act as they do? That's sort of what guides my behavior. I've yelled at the PM, you know, from time to time, and I have to think about it.
Jason.
So yes, you know, would that be what?
That would be a career limiting move, Tom.
Would that be what somebody wants us to do? But the other day, and believe it or not, I actually sat in a room full of ADMs from a department. I'd asked for a meeting. I'm trying to work sources, and I got a meeting. I won't say the department. It's obviously, it was an off the record thing. I'll just say that's it. And we agreed on that. So I'm sitting there, and I'm explaining to them, why won't you guys talk to me? And they're telling me why they're scared. And I think we all understand that. But then they asked me, I said, what do you think of us? And the big problem that they saw for us was credibility. They said, how can you guys as a press gallery be at all credible? You got Pamela Wallen, you got Mike Duffy. Those are the two bad sheep. They used to be your colleagues, yeah. And then you look around on MPs' benches, you got...
Right, yeah. They weren't cooking their expenses when they were in the gallery.
No. Well, we'll talk about that. But we look at the House of Commons. John Williamson used to be National Post. Jim Munson. The point is in sports journalism, we don't have sports reporters on the ice. But we have this back and forth, actually being the politicians, or you're the journalist. Now you're the director of communications. Now you're back in, and that's a problem for our public, who looks at us in the gallery and goes, you're playing for a team. Don't try and tell me you're not. I don't believe you. You're playing for a team. Right. Ergo, the media party. And that's a meme that is out there that somehow, I don't know how we do it, we got to address.
Jason, final word goes to you.
Yes, of course, the gallery matters, but so too do other media now. And so too do other platforms. And the media is going to have to constantly reinvent itself to maintain and develop new audiences. I think maybe a more interesting question for a future panel is, does political journalism matter because of the fracturing of markets? I say this pulling the camera back, because I was recently doing a news conference in the Edmonton legislature. I used to do a lot of media work there. When there were 20-plus full-time journalists in that gallery, now there's 3 or 4 maximum. The last Ontario election, I remember in the 95 and 2000 elections, what happened was on the supper hour news every single night. In the last election, most nights of the campaign, no television news coverage. I went to an event with Tim Hudak, who I think is in the building here tonight, during the last campaign, and the only TV camera, this was for the leader of the opposition's main media event, was from Fairchild Chinese Television. So, I'm sorry, just to pull the camera back here, I think there's a larger context about what the shrinking audiences and shrinking resources means more generally for political journalism. And frankly, if you go down and talk to Tim Hudak, that's a problem. When you're an opposition leader in a mid-sized media market now, trying to get your message out through so-called earned media. So I think there are bigger challenges than just what's happening here. My final advice to all of my friends in the gallery, and I mean that, is don't cover yourselves. I think that's kind of a story the public's not terribly interested in.
Jason Kenney. Yeah, I think we all agree with that. Jason Kenney, thank you very much for being here. David Aiken of Sun News, Senator Jim Munson, the free-range senator, and Jen Ditchburn of the Canadian Press. Thank you all very much. Terrific discussion. Thank you.
Bonsoir, je suis Nathalie Turvey, la directrice générale de la Fondation du journalisme canadien. Au nom de la Fondation, je tiens à remercier les membres de notre panel, Jennifer Ditchburn, le sénateur Jim Munson, David Aiken et le ministre Jason Kenney, de s'être joints à nous ce soir. Merci aussi à notre modérateur Tom Clark d'avoir mené cette discussion substantielle et animée sur l'influence de la couverture médiatique sur les actions du gouvernement. Please join me in a round of appreciation for Tom Clark and our panel once again. I would like to thank this evening's sponsors, BMO Financial Group and Shaw, for making tonight's event possible. Our thanks to the National Arts Center, our venue sponsor, for hosting us this evening. And a special thank you to CJF Program Committee member, the Venerable Hugh Windsor, for your support of tonight's event. On behalf of the CJF, thanks to all of you for joining us for our second annual J-Talk in Ottawa. We look forward to seeing you again soon, and I invite you to stay, meet our panel, and continue the conversation at the cocktail reception. Merci et bonne soirée. Bonsoir.